Plugged into the pulse of tomorrow's care, Dr. April's voice is everywhere. From gadgets to game changers, don't miss the ride. It's MedTech Madness, science amplified. MedTech Madness with Dr. April.
Welcome to MedTech Madness, the podcast where we share the methods behind the madness of bringing breakthrough medical technologies to life. I'm Dr. April, and whether you're a startup founder, clinician, innovator, investor, or just a curious mind like myself, you're in the right place. This show is here to help you cut through the noise, navigate the regulatory maze, and accelerate your speed to patient. You'll learn what it really takes to move from idea to impact, from evidence generation to commercialization. Short disclaimer, this podcast is powered by AI, but the content is not created by it. What you'll hear comes straight from my lectures, research, fieldwork, and papers reimagined into this new format. I love teaching, and this is just another way to spread knowledge and spark smarter decisions in medtech. So buckle up. The journey from bench to bedside is wild. This is MedTech Madness, and I'm thrilled to be your guide. Welcome back to MedTech Madness, the podcast where breakthrough ideas, cutting-edge tech, and real-world healthcare collide. I'm your host, Dr. April, and today we're cracking open a topic that really intimidates a lot of people, but actually shouldn't. So whether you're a clinician, an innovator, or just medtech curious, understanding coding is a crucial step to navigating that messy middle between great technology and real-world adoption. So in this episode, we're going back to basics. We'll break down what coding actually means, how it affects reimbursement, and why even the best technologies fail if they don't play by the rules of the reimbursement game. So if you're in medtech and not thinking about coding from day one, well, it's time to change that. So let's get into it.
Welcome to the deep dive. We're all about cutting through the noise, right? Getting you right to the core of what you really need to know. Now, if you're a medtech innovator, you know that feeling, that incredible moment when a breakthrough idea just clicks. You can see it saving lives, saving money, improving quality of life, you know, faster diagnoses, less resources. It's the dream. But then, well, reality hits. We've seen so many brilliant ideas, promising technologies just kind of stall. Why? Yeah. Often it's because reimbursement wasn't really factored in early enough.
Yeah, that's a huge one. It's really a foundational mistake. You can have the most amazing innovation, but if there's no clear path for how it gets covered, how it gets paid for, well, it hits a wall.
Exactly. And that is precisely what we are unpacking today. This deep dive is all about decoding medtech reimbursement. We're going to get into the weeds on medical coding, how it varies, and crucially, its direct impact on getting your tech to patients. And guiding us, we've got an expert here who's fantastic at making this complex stuff actionable. We're drawing heavily on the insights of Dr. April Zambelli-Wiener. Her perspective, candid, sharp, always focused on the evidence and strategy, it's really core to this whole discussion, especially around evidence generation.
Yeah, it's great to be here to talk about this because reimbursement, look, it's not just some bureaucratic checkbox you tick at the end. It really is a strategic pathway. You need to understand it ideally right from day one.
Okay, so reimbursement, it's clearly more than just getting paid. What are the absolute fundamentals, the building blocks we need to grasp?
Right, so fundamentally, reimbursement, it really rests on three pillars. They're all interconnected. First, you've got payment. That's the actual dollar amount paid for a service or procedure. It's simple enough, right? Second is coverage. This defines the rules, what criteria have to be met for that service to be paid. And third, maybe the most crucial piece for our discussion today is coding. This is the language. It classifies conditions, services, supplies. These three, payment, coverage, coding, they're linked. And importantly, they're often driven by where the care happens, the site of service.
Okay, coding. You called it the bedrock, the essential language. But honestly, to an outsider, it can feel like just paperwork, you know? Can you break down why it's so much more? What does it actually do?
That's a fair point. It can feel that way. But think of coding as like a universal identifier. It's a label for a diagnosis, a drug, a device, a procedure, and it does a lot of heavy lifting. For example, codes track utilization. How often is something being used? Where? They're fundamental for setting those payment rates we talked about. They also make communication between the provider and the payer clear and efficient. It's the link, you know. Connecting the coverage rules to the actual payment. Plus, it speeds up claims processing, vital for the system. And codes are also critical for health policy research, understanding trends, outcomes. What makes it tricky, though, for innovators, is that these coding systems, they aren't the same everywhere. They vary based on the site of service, and they all have different update schedules. So yeah, understanding coding isn't just about getting paid. It's really fundamental for mapping your reimbursement path and for generating the right evidence.
Wow. Okay. So it really does touch everything, not just payment, but research, policy, efficiency, the whole ecosystem. Given all these different systems and variations you mentioned, how do we navigate this? What are the main coding systems innovators absolutely need to know?
Okay, so there are three main ones you'll definitely run into in medtech. First up is ICD-10-CM. Now, everyone uses this. It describes the patient's diagnosis. Why are they seeking treatment? Then there's ICD-10-PCS. This one's specific. It's only for procedures done in the hospital and patient setting. And the big one, the umbrella, is HCPCS, the Healthcare Procedural Coding System. This covers services in hospital outpatient departments, ambulatory surgery centers, ASCs, or things done by physicians or other professionals. Now, HCPCS has two levels. Level one is basically CPT codes, current procedural terminology. The AMA handles these, are those five-digit numeric codes for medical, surgical, diagnostic stuff. Then level two are the HCPCS codes themselves, managed by CMS. These are alphanumeric. They're for specific items, think devices, drugs, supplies, and services that don't quite fit into a CPT code.
Okay. CPT codes. This feels like a really critical junction. I've heard innovators get tripped up here, particularly on the difference between Category 1 and Category 3 CPT codes. What's the deal there? Why is this distinction so important strategically?
Oh, absolutely. This is a make or break distinction. Let's start with Category 1 CPT codes. Think of these as the established codes. They're for services and procedures that are, you know, common practice. The bar is pretty high. You typically need FDA clearance or approval for any required devices or drugs. The procedure needs to be done by lots of doctors across the country. We're talking frequency consistent with widespread use, like maybe 100 plus U.S. installations as a rough benchmark for widespread. It also has to align with current medical practice, think society guidelines. And critically, you need solid clinical efficacy data, documented in several, usually around 5 to 10, strong peer-reviewed publications.
5 to 10. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. An example might be code 93701. That's for bioimpedance analysis for non-invasive fluid monitoring in heart failure patients. Established tech.
Got it. So Cat 1 is the gold standard. What about Cat 3 then?
Right. So Category 3 CPT codes are quite different. They're temporary. They're specifically for emerging tech services procedures. Because they're for new stuff, payers often see them as investigational, and that can really hinder coverage. There's no set payment value assigned nationally. It's up to each payer. Medicare might give it an APC level ambulatory payment classification, but that usually just covers the facility side, not the doctor's fee. The requirements, much, much lower than Cat 1. The procedure just needs to be currently or recently done in humans and have support from at least one CPT or HCPPAC advisor. HCPPAC is the Healthcare Professional Advisory Committee. They give input on coding, or alternatively, you need potential efficacy backed by at least one peer-reviewed publication.
Yes, one.
Just one. Or you could have an IRB-approved protocol for an ongoing U.S. trial, you know, Institutional Review Board approval. The key thing here, and this is maybe a bit blunt, but anyone can get a code. The bar for a Cat 3 is very low. An example could be something like 0485T or 0486T, codes for optical coherence tomography of the middle ear, like for a new type of otoscope. And then, just quickly, there are also unlisted CPT codes. These are often used for brand new tech, sometimes even before FDA approval, mostly just for reporting and tracking until a specific code, like a Cat 3, gets established.
Okay, so let me see if I've got this. Cat 3. Yeah. Easier to get, gets you tracking, but seen as investigational, maybe no reliable payment. Cat 1. Hard to get, needs lots of evidence, but unlocks real widespread reimbursement. Is that about right?
That's exactly it. Cat 3 gets your foot in the door, lets you start generating real-world data. But Cat 1 is where you want to end up for sustainable business. It signals acceptance, value.
Right. So for our innovators listening, the huge question is, do I need my own specific CPT code? Or can I maybe use one that's already out there? How do you make that call?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Look, if there's an existing CPT code that precisely describes what your technology does, and I mean precisely, not just kind of, and if the payment and coverage tied to that code actually work for your business, then yeah, you can probably use it. But figuring that out isn't always easy. I remember a case with a Trichomonas vaginalis test. The new tech didn't perfectly match the code description, but similar tech was getting paid out of that code. So it required a real business judgment call. Plus, you have to be careful. CMS, through their Correct Coding Initiative, is really focused on making sure coding is accurate. You have to code to the highest level of specificity. You can't just monkey around with codes, as they say. If a specific code exists for what you do, you're expected to use it.
No creative coding allowed.
Definitely not. So if no existing code fits perfectly, or critically, if the payment and coverage for an existing code just don't reflect your product's value or support your model, then yes, you'll likely need to apply for a new one. Going for a Cat 3 needs less evidence up front, sure, but remember that investigational label can limit uptake. If you're aiming for Cat 1, and eventually you probably should be, then getting strong support from medical societies and having those robust publications, that's non-negotiable. It's your foundation.
So it's this mix of technical description and business viability. Okay, that leads to another thought. Are there times when you actually don't need a code? Or maybe pursuing one just isn't the top priority right away.
Yes, absolutely. There are situations where a separate code isn't really necessary for payment. Think about disposable equipment or products that just get bundled into an existing payment.
Yeah.
Like take a new, slightly better otoscope for a doctor's office. The doctor's visit itself is already paid for under an E&M code, evaluation and management. The otoscope cost is just part of their overhead. No separate payment for the device. Now, even then, a company might want a code for other reasons. Maybe tracking inventory, supply chain, utilization data, separate from direct reimbursement needs.
Right. But what about the strategy? You mentioned early decisions having long-term impact. Can you elaborate on that? What's this trap you hinted at?
Right. The long-term trap of early revenue. This is a really critical point. Drawing on that sort of truth-telling perspective, Dr. April emphasizes, some companies get tempted to use existing codes or maybe stack codes, combine codes for different small parts of their service just to get some money flowing early. Let's say you have a complex diagnostic algorithm. Maybe you find a way to bill for three separate components at $5 each, netting you $15 total. And you think, great, revenue, traction.
Sounds good initially.
It does. But here's the killer. The actual value of your test, the R&D, the sophistication of that algorithm, it's probably worth way, way more than $15. But once you've established that $15 payment level, it almost doesn't matter how much amazing evidence you generate later showing its true value. When you walk into CMS or a private payer with that evidence, they're going to look back. They'll say, oh, what were we paying before? $15. Okay, guess what? The new price is probably going to be $15 or maybe a tiny bit more. You essentially anchor yourself to that low number. You're almost never getting away from that initial $15.
Wow. So that early win becomes a long-term ceiling. That's sobering.
It is. And we see companies struggle with this. Once that low value perception is baked in, it's incredibly difficult to justify a higher price point later, no matter the data. So you have to make a really tough business decision early. Does $15 work for the long haul? For your margins, your sustainability. If the answer is no, then do not lock yourself in with that early low payment. Mm. The short-term cash isn't worth the long-term damage.
That is such a crucial warning. Avoid the temptation of easy, early money if it undermines your true value proposition. Okay, so planning is key. Thinking long-term is key. But what about the actual process of getting a code? You mentioned bureaucracy. What are the timelines really like? Is this fast?
Oh, definitely not fast.
Yeah.
This is why planning way, way ahead is just essential. The AMA's CPT editorial panel, the group that reviews and approves these codes, they only meet three times a year, September, February, May. And you need to get your full application submitted 12 weeks before those meetings.
12 weeks prior. Okay.
But here's the real kicker, the part that often shocks people. Let's say you get a Category 1 CPT code approved sometime in 2023. Great news, right?
Yeah.
Well, that code won't actually become effective and usable for billing until January 1st, 2025.
2025, a year and a half, maybe more later.
Exactly. It illustrates a fundamental rule in this whole space. Yeah. Everything takes way longer than you think it will. You absolutely have to build these long timelines into your planning from the get-go.
No kidding. That really drives home the need for early strategic thinking. It also reinforces what you said earlier about site of service being critical. Can we dig into that more? How absolute is that rule? Does it really dictate everything about payment?
It pretty much does, yes. Current U.S. healthcare reimbursement is overwhelmingly dictated by where the care is provided. And the crucial implication is the same service, same CPT code does not mean the same payment in different places. Payments can vary dramatically.
Let's quickly run through the main CMS systems based on site of care. Okay, first, the physician office. Payment here is governed by the Medicare Physician Fee Schedule, the MPFS. It's directly based on CPT codes. And remember, those Cat 3 CPT codes, generally not reimbursed here because they don't have an assigned value on the annual fee schedule.
Okay, no Cat 3 payment in the office. Got it. Mm-hmm. Then you have the hospital inpatient setting. This runs on the Inpatient Prospective Payment System, or IPPS. Here, payment is bundled. You get one payment for the whole episode of care based on the patient's diagnosis-related group, or DRG. It reflects patient complexity. Usually, your specific device or technology doesn't get paid separately. It's just part of the DRG cost.
Bundled in.
Unless you qualify for NTAP, the New Technology Add-on Payment, this is a special program, hard to get. It's for truly new, often breakthrough tech, where you can show the existing DRG payment leads to a widespread loss for hospitals using your tech. It's meant to bridge the gap. NTAP usually only lasts about 3 years, though. The idea is that CMS will eventually adjust the DRG itself. Also note that the doctor's work, their professional fee, can often still be billed separately under the physician fee schedule, even for an inpatient stay.
Interesting. And what about the hospital's perspective on this DRG system?
Key insight. If your technology helps a hospital reduce their costs for treating a patient within a specific DRG, their profit margin on that DRG goes up. They like that. And another huge factor for hospitals is the 30-day readmission rate. This is a major quality metric with big financial penalties. Hospitals generally can't bill again if a patient is readmitted for a related reason within that DRG's window, often 30 days. They eat that cost. So if your tech helps prevent readmissions, that's a really big deal for them.
Okay, so inpatient is bundled DRGs with NTAP as a possibility, and efficiency readmissions matter. What about outpatient?
Right. Hospital outpatient departments and ambulatory surgery centers, ASCs, fall under the Hospital Outpatient Prospective Payment System, or HOPPS. Payments here are mapped to ABC's ambulatory payment classifications. These are also bundled payments, similar concept to DRGs, but for outpatient procedures. And there's a similar program to NTAP here called TPT Transitional Pass-Through Payment. Again, for new tech, temporary extra payment.
This site of service thing is clearly critical. Let's make it concrete. You mentioned an innovative wound dressing earlier, biomaterial, reduces infection, maybe changes color. Walk us through how the payment for that specific product changes depending on where it's applied.
Perfect example. Okay, so our fancy new wound dressing. If it's used inpatient in the hospital, it's just part of the cost of care covered by the DRG payment for that patient's day. Bundled, no separate payment for the dressing itself. The hospital buys it, uses it, gets paid the DRG rate.
Okay. What about an outpatient clinic, like a wound care center?
In a hospital outpatient setting or a dedicated wound care clinic, that dressing is generally bundled into the payment for the main procedure being done, like wound debridement, which has its own CPT code. They might bill a HCPCS code, one of those level 2 codes, to track the use of the supply, but insurance isn't likely to pay separately for it. It's considered part of the cost of the procedure's APC payment.
So still no direct payment for the dressing. What about a regular doctor's office?
Same story, essentially. In the physician office, the cost of that dressing is bundled into the payment for the physician's evaluation and management, visit the E&M code. Again, they'd likely need a HCPCS code to report the supply used, but it's not separately payable by insurance. It's part of the practice expense component of the E&M payment.
Wow. So in all three common settings for this type of product, there's potentially no separate direct reimbursement for the product itself.
Exactly. It highlights how critical it is to understand where your product fits and how the payment mechanisms work in that specific setting. Your value proposition might need to focus on cost savings within the bundle or improved outcomes like reducing readmissions rather than expecting direct payment for the item. And just a quick practical tip here. If you have a supplier device, you can actually inquire with the CMS PDSC team that's pricing, data analysis, and coding. They can help determine if an existing HCPCS code already describes your product, which you might need for billing, even if it's not separately paid.
That's a great resource. Okay, this has been incredibly insightful, really peeling back the layers on reimbursement and coding. So let's try to crystallize this. What are the absolute key takeaways our listeners should walk away with? And crucially, what are the immediate next steps they should take for their innovation?
Okay, key lessons. One, reimbursement planning cannot be an afterthought. It needs to start early, day one, ideally. Two, understand coding deeply. Know the difference between Cat 1, Cat 3 unlisted codes and what each really means for payment and market access. 3. Site of service is king. It fundamentally dictates the payment pathway and amount. Same thing, different place, different money. And 4. Be strategic about early coding decisions. Don't fall into that trap of chasing low early revenue if it locks you into an unsustainable value long term. As for next steps for you listening, here's what I'd suggest, like right now. First, map out the current standard of care for the condition your product addresses. Identify every step involving medical resource, use office visits, tests, imaging, procedures, and find their associated codes. Second, if your tech is used inpatient or outpatient, identify the relevant DRGs or APCs. Research what the payments associated with those are. And third, do your homework on similar products. Look at your closest competitors or analogous tech. What codes are they using? Check the code descriptions. Find out the payment rates. This context is invaluable.
Fantastic actionable advice. Map the standard of care, research the relevant bundled payments, and investigate your competitors' coding strategies. So what does all this really mean for your innovation? As you start mapping out that standard of care, as you look at those DRGs and APCs, begin asking the deeper question. Who truly cares about this, economically speaking? How does your technology impact the bottom line for key players like hospitals, like payers? Does it save them money within a bundle? Does it prevent costly readmissions? Does it shift costs somewhere else? Because ultimately, truly understanding those economic ripple effects beyond just the clinical wow factor, that's how you transform a brilliant idea to a life-changing technology that actually reaches the patients who need it most.
Well, that's it for today. Thanks so much for diving into the madness with me. If you're working on something groundbreaking in medtech, whether you're a founder, a funder, or a fellow fan of the space, I would love to hear from you. You can reach out directly or learn more about the work we're doing at TTI Health Research and Economics, where we help medtech innovators accelerate their path to market and prove their value to the people who matter most, patients, clinicians, and payers. Visit us at TTI-research.com or connect with me on LinkedIn. And if you found this episode helpful, subscribe, leave a review, or share it with someone navigating their own medtech madness. Until next time, stay bold, stay evidence-based, and keep building what the world needs.